Forever young adult book plate.
Welcome to the April 2020 edition of Book Plate. Find us on the web at foreveryoungadult.com. Join a book club chapter in your area or start your own by visiting us online and clicking on the book club link at the top of the page. Don't forget to check out our monthly themed wallpaper created by graphics goddess Mandy C, which is always featured at the top of the landing page. I am Annie, sound engineer, host, and in this book, it's blank. I don't know who I am. I'll have to think about it. I definitely identified with the main character, but she's way more quiet than I ever have been in my life.
I'm Britt, and in this book, I am Joan Jett the cat.
Cute. I love it.
I kept forgetting that the cat's name was Joan Jett. Like, I would read it and then instantly forget it. So then when it said, like, Joan Jett sauntered up to me, I'm like, what?
Oh, yeah. Is this a
Joan
dream
Jett
sequence?
Was purring and wound herself between my legs. I'm like, oh, my.
Yeah. All right. Then I'm Amanda, and I am the box of Riot Girl memorabilia.
Oh, love it. Love it. Love it. So good. Yeah. Okay. Gonna go into our amuse-bouche, which is our bite of what we're going to get into today. Vivian is a regular high school girl in a regular Texas town, one obsessed with football and the good old American way, including all the sexism, racism, and classism a girl can handle. Cue the erupting rage of a 17-year-old who is afraid to speak in class, but has a burning desire to make a difference. With a Riot Girl soundtrack, what could go wrong? A punk rock offering by Jennifer Mathieu, or Mathieu, I hope I'm spelling pronouncing that right. Sound good? Sound like what we read?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, the next section is our other cover take, where we ask our significant others what they thought about the book just by looking at the cover. Jamile, my partner, says, it's about empowerment, kicking someone in the balls or the vagina. Moxie, what else am I supposed to say? It's about Moxie, very aptly named.
Equal opportunity genital kicking. I did not ask Garrett. I was going to do it this morning, and because of quarantine and not knowing what day or time it is, we're basically nocturnal, so he's still sleeping. He would probably have some analysis about, like, the colors on the cover representing whatever, I don't know. In the position of the certain font. Sorry.
Phil said that he thought it was about someone about to become a rock star. Oh, I guess in a sense is true, except the music part.
Yeah. A social justice rock
That's
star.
That's right.
It's what we need these days.
It is.
Okay. Well, our appetizers, the appetizer is secret personal pizza. There's a scene where I need to look this up before I start this.
Vivian,
yes, I already said that. Or Vivian. She, like, stays home sick, quote unquote, and makes herself a personal pizza and then feels guilty about making a pizza when she's supposed to be sick. which I really loved. And man, I really can't stay away from the alliteration, but I put sexist Texas as the appetizer. Yeah, that is basically what this book is steeped in.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda, I would actually love for you to start this off, since you said this really reminded you of your experience.
Yeah, it did. I grew up around 1996 was my prime high school year, so not too far off from the character's mother in the book. I think she was probably a 92 graduate or whatever. And the boys were ridiculous at my school. The school was all about football culture. Girls were expected to bake them cookies, literally make boxes for the football players of, like, cookies and brownies, and decorate their lockers and do all these things to make them feel like big men. And if you weren't, like, on the committee to do that, then you were, like, trash. And so you know that I was not on the committee to do that.
Were you on any committees?
I was on the literary magazine and Spanish club.
So I just wanted to, sorry, to interject a meme that I saw and that I saved to my phone, because I just look at it and I instantly feel better. It's Oscar the Grouch, And it says, just because you're trash doesn't mean you can't do great things. It's called a garbage can, not a garbage
Okay, that's great. I love it.
Wow.
Continue.
I've always loved Oscar.
My favorite.
The Grouch National Anthem is one of my favorite things ever.
Yeah. So yeah, there was just that. It was like lots of sexism. The boys didn't want you to answer. It would get like slightly better once I got into honors classes, but not like totally, you know? Yeah, and just they were catered to in every way. If you had a problem with a boy, it was your duty to resolve it because you're the one who should be mediating things, and they just can't help themselves. And like, it was just a lot of that. And I worked very hard to get out of college out of state.
So. Yeah.
But that's why I was so surprised when I was reading this and I felt triggered because I don't want to believe that that's still happening, but they're telling me that it is, and I do believe them, so.
Yeah, like I said, I think it was triggering just because it was women being silenced for me, which has long been an issue in general. I had issues with sexism in school, but mainly like much younger when I got told like, girls can't do this, girls can't do that. And then I would do it and get in trouble. So like, you know, there was a playground incident where I got told like girls can't kick or something. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then I kicked him in the balls. And my mom was like, you could have seriously injured him and sent him to the hospital. And I was just like, I'm sorry, but he told me I couldn't do something that I clearly could do. Like, I still didn't feel bad. Like, I felt bad that I'd made my mom yell at me. Bad about that boy,
right? Because if you couldn't have done it, then he wouldn't have gotten hurt. So I mean, you were just testing his hypothesis, right?
I was like, how are you really going to say that to my face and not expect a reaction? You know, like, you can't, you know, I'm just the type of person that has never been willing to be shouted down. I think but incidents in school definitely like come to mind. There was, I think about this one a lot, especially because it was like fat shaming too. But we had an after school bus that didn't have a regular route. Like once it got to my neighborhood, there was a place where it could go straight, which would go like right directly to my street. Or if it turned left, then it went all the way around the loop before it would come back to my street. So I would be on the bus for like another hour. And so there was like a whole there was one situation where the bus driver was letting us choose which way we wanted to go. And I was like arguing for straight and everyone else wanted left. And some boy on the bus got up and was like, make her walk, she could use it or something like that. Like,
oh no.
This was middle school too. So in fucking a whole middle school bus full of children. And I just like got up and I was like, fuck you, which is one of the first times I've ever sworn in public because I was such a goody two shoes church girl. I never swore. And like walked off the bus in shame and walked home.
That's not in shame that you stood up for yourself. That's amazing. That's something I don't know that I would have been able to do. So.
I was pissed. I mean, I think people were like, they were like, wow, she reacted, you know, but I'm just like, you all fucking know me. Like, man, like, you can't. I mean,
what
I just
think was going to happen.
I just refuse. So I think that was the thing that was giving me the gut. Twisties in this book is like they were so quiet, and like when they speak up the teachers aren't, no one backs them, right? Like it takes so long in the book for anyone to really like have a reaction.
I did like the secret code of it all, like the zine told you like what to do to identify each other subtly. That was kind of neat to have signs of resistance before you put your voice forward. I think that would have helped a lot of girls at my school. They had known that it had people who would support them.
Yeah, because I mean, there are girls who like want to participate, but they're kind of like hesitant and like, I don't know who else is going to do it. Am I going to stand out? And so like the sort of like silent symbols of solidarity go a long way. I mean, like historically too, that's been the case, like with different marginalized populations, like I was actually just reading about the history of head wraps for Black women. So it's, you know, something that is common in a lot of African cultures. But then when Africans were brought to the U.S. and enslaved, they were like made to wear head wraps a lot of times so that they could be identified, especially like light-skinned women who could pass for white. Mm-hmm. And it was like partially to like, you know, mark them as like inferior or lesser, and partially because like white women were worried that like they would be too like alluring and distracting to their men or whatever, because our hair is so mysterious and full of secrets. But like women would start like folding their head wraps a certain way, like to communicate messages to each other.
Oh, cool.
I just thought that was like so dope when I read that, like certain folds meant this or certain styles of wrap meant that. So like they basically fought back against it by saying like, okay, you're gonna make us cover our hair. So they went like bold with like bright colors and beads and like jewels and shit and made it like as decorative as possible, because it's like you're trying to silence us and like make us take up less space, so like we're gonna like fight back against that. And I just thought that was really
cool. Amazing.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Did you have any overt sexism in your school, Britt?
Dress code. My school had a dress code, and it was very obviously skewed toward girls fashion, because it was like your skirt can't be shorter than the length of your fingertips when you put your arms by your sides. It was no spaghetti straps. It was like certain kind of shoes, although my school did have a lot of stairs, so that could have been a safety issue with like heels, but you know, whatever.
I had the fingertip length thing, and I'm really tall. I have a really long torso, and I have very short arms. I have like T-Rex arms, so I could wear the shortest skirts, and I'm like, it's the dress code. Your dress code is arbitrary. Like,
yeah. Like, there were a few things that were like neutral. So like one thing was, if your shirt had any kind of logo, it had to be able to be covered up by one hand. I don't know why that is. And then like there was no unnatural hair colors.
What?
So you couldn't like dye your hair.
Yeah, they had that in mine too.
And guys had to shave.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny because you went to private school, didn't you?
I went to public school,
but we have the same rules. And then did you go to public school, Annie?
I went to public school, and I don't remember any of that. People had all kinds of hair. I don't grow enough facial hair to be told to shave, but I don't think that there was any requirement. People had all kinds of weird beards.
Maybe it's just because you grew up close to a city?
Yeah, I'm wondering. I mean, also, we were directly related to white flight. So we had very, very, very few Black people at my school, like a handful. And the majority of them, well, at least the family that I knew the best, it was this African family. So they like were all siblings, were all in the honors classes, you know, like model minority. Otherwise, it was like mainly white kids. We definitely had Latinx kids and Asian folks across the diaspora. I think one of the reasons we had fewer dress codes is because no one was concerned with gang violence. You know, I think a lot of dress codes in Seattle, as far as I knew, were associated with that, or because you had to have a private school like uniform. I don't know about the skirts. We had a lot of kids wearing a lot of like interesting, provocative things. I don't know. I was true to my queer roots, mainly wearing things that like did not show my body shape, or wearing things that had so many patterns on them you could not see me. That was my style in high school. I had discovered thrifting, and so I was wearing like men's polyester pants and shirts mismatched intentionally, so literally like the clothes would obscure my body because I was so ashamed of it, you know. I never got caught up in any sort of dress code thing, and I never saw anyone else. But my mom talked about the finger length thing with the skirt. She got sent home once because, you know, the style when she was going to high school was like short skirts. I remember her telling me how embarrassed she was about that.
Well, I think that's, I really like that point in the book, is how they did it in front of people to humiliate certain girls.
And then gave them like,
likely to speak up at any other thing.
And gave them like the ugly ass, like baggy old stained school uniform or whatever, the football uniform or whatever to wear. Like I think somebody calls them like the Hester Prynne's or something. Yeah. And I'm like, that's exactly it. Like the Scarlet Letter.
They just want them to like not think too much of themselves. I can see like the male faculty members doing it to girls they thought needed to be knocked down a peg, you know?
I don't remember what the consequence was at my school for breaking the dress code. Like, I don't know if they sent you home or if they had like a sweater you had to wear or something. I don't remember. Because I was a goody two shoes and never broke it.
I mean, we had like, yeah, I really don't remember. But I was so disassociated from the like mainstream of what was going on in high school. Like, I never ate in the cafeteria because I was concerned about bullying and like just really was terrified of all the people in the sports teams who had bullied me previously and who were now like top of the pyramid, right? I just wanted to stay as far away from them as possible.
Smart.
But yeah, and I remember the lockers being thing and being confused about that. Like, there's one day I remember specifically like walking by this row of lockers and being like, this is so much work. Who does this?
Mm-hmm.
Why? I just like not, because I, you know, I'm assuming it was some sort of committee of the sports folks, but I had just like walked myself as far away from that as possible. I have no idea how that even worked at our school.
Yeah, I don't know. Didn't go to the sports games, except in senior year when I was in the sports band, but that's only because I wanted to be in the orchestra, but they scheduled orchestra for the same class period as the newspaper, and I was like already an editor on the paper, so I went to go see the dean, and she's like, sorry, we can't change the schedule for just you. You're literally the only one who wants to do both.
Like, God damn it.
So I joined the sports band, which was just... There were only two flutes, me and my one other friend, and the director made us switch to piccolo because we could not be heard over all the brass instruments. So that is the only reason I would ever go near a sporting event.
Well, I thought that was really funny because she says that everybody goes to the football games. That was like, yeah. That was my school. I went to high school football games regularly, like until I got my own car and could do other things, which was like junior year. So I didn't like football. Nobody I knew liked football, but we did that because that's the thing you had to do. Like, it was weird if you didn't.
So were the football players like treated like kings outside of school? Like in this book, you know, they get free pizza and like, you know, people, the lady at the Jack in the Box drive through is like, oh, you know.
I can't attest to that because I was never friends with any of them and I stayed away from most people as much as I could.
legit.
I can imagine. And it was funny because they weren't any good. Like, we didn't even have a winning football team, but they still got this mad respect, like they were doing something. And then we had this amazing girls volleyball team that won everything all the time, and they got no money and no props or whatever. Crazy.
Like the soccer team in this book.
Yeah. It's so amazing to me how that still happens today. Like, we definitely, our football team was meh. You know, we probably had a better basketball team, but the star team was the girls softball team. They won state my fucking senior year.
Yeah. At my school, the girls volleyball team was, yeah, just the best, like, out of all of them.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're a little bit past our Me Too movement, although it's still going strong. We kind of have this, like, cultural, social, political revolution going on right now, where a lot of things are coming to light. And one of the conversations we were having was the call out of J. Cole and No Name. Do you two see this at all on Twitter?
I was wondering who is the latest dude who did some fucked up shit, because like my whole feed the last couple days has been about like survivors, like sharing stories and things like that. I'm like, oh God. So I knew that somebody...
I heard someone in comedy did something. I've been seeing a lot of comedians talking about that.
I think there's still just, like, people being outed all the time. I've seen comics.
Good.
And stuff, comedy. But the J. Cole and No Name conversation was J. Cole, who is a rapper, wrote a song calling out No Name, basically, like, tone policing her for her activism. She is another... rapper. Well, yes, she's a rapper, but like her stuff is more alternative, right? J. Cole's like more mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, he admitted to the way she speaks making him feel like he wasn't smart enough. Basically, like she has an intellectual dissection of what's going on and commentary on what's happening. And he was like, don't leave us out because you're so smart, which is like tone policing. And then also there was some comment about like, help us get there, which is like doing the emotional labor. and she dropped a 2-minute like beat, and she dropped a 2-minute response with a Mad Lib beat in the back and just like destroyed everything, saying like, you know, people are dying in the street, but you had to make a song about me, like,
yeah,
me. And I found that really interesting, that even like women have been doing this work for so long and like have been valued and have been good at what they do for so long, and we still have like at the very top and the very most public and the very like most powerful things been shut out. You know, we can just look at the last presidential election, you know, and it's like the most qualified candidate, whether you liked her or not, shut out for the least qualified candidate.
Yeah.
Because, and I think a lot of that is sexism. I think there's a lot of else going on there, but I think a lot of that just like, don't think a woman can do a man's job. But like, what the fuck is a man's job at this point?
So there's a lot of dialogue right now within like the Black activism community, because Black cis men are the white people of Black people. And like, I did not make that up. That is the discussion that's going on right now. Because like, they expect everybody to ride hard for them. And then when it comes time to like, ride hard for us, for Black women, for Black queer people, like, they step on us or ignore us. Or so like, Common, the rapper, he tweeted Black Trans Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yes. And he got so much pushback from mostly Black cis men saying, well, like, well, why do you have to make this a trans issue? Oh, and like, gosh, obviously, like, they're included in Black Lives Matter, so you don't need to, you're derailing the conversation. And like, all of this stuff that is just like, no, like, we have to examine our own like intersectionality. And it's not just Black cis men, cis women also, but it is mostly Black cis men, and they just don't want to talk about it, because they're like, you're distracting from the purpose, or we don't really need to talk about that. I'm like, no, we do. We need to keep talking about this. We need to keep dissecting it, and we need to keep like calling each other out, because that's like how we stay accountable and how we grow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like that poor woman who was beat in Minneapolis, like during the Black Lives Matter protest, because they found out she was trans. It's like, and that was by Black folks, you know, it's the intersectionality of the issue is like really intense. And actually Jamile and I got into a little bit of an argument, not like an argument, but you know, Jamile was making some statements like they need to have, it's too, he was like, there's too many goals. There needs to be one goal, one way, you know, like he was like, if there's too many goals, cause he keeps using the, Wall Street, the Occupy movement as an example. Like there were so many goals that like people think nothing happened. But the reason that nothing happened is because it got fought against. They got removed, and like specifically Obama put resources to like silence that movement. You know, it's, and across this country, there's reasons why that was silenced. And so, you know, Jamal was like, there's too many goals. And I was like, no, there are leaders. There are leaders. They have their list of demands. And like most of them are women or queer folks who've had this list of demands for years and decades. And, you know, there's reasons why you don't know that,
mm-hmm.
you know, right?
I read something like Black trans women have a life expectancy of less than 40 years.
Yeah, it's like 35
or something. Clearly, that is a very vital problem. Like, and I'm assuming all the defund the police stuff would go with that, because their murders are never investigated or brought to any justice.
But if we bring that up, then we're like distracting from the main issue or making it a trans thing. And it's like, no, it affects all of us.
Yeah.
Like,
and what's the main issue? The main issue is racism. Like, all of this has to do with that.
Right. But you can't ignore the intersections that come with that. And when you have privilege in other ways, like being a cis man, you can ignore it because it doesn't affect you directly or whatever, or like you're like, oh, what does that have to do with me? And then you're just perpetuating the same violence that is done to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do that all the time too. We perpetuate the same violence that's done to us all the time.
Yes, yes. Gosh, it's so true.
I think this book was well timed.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even though it's not, well, I don't know. It's about, you know, feminism and women's issues, but, like, we can't ignore the intersection and their intersectionality that comes along with that, which I'm glad the book didn't shy away from as well. And, like, just, you know, with everything going on with social justice movements, like, it's just, yeah. I was reading this and I just felt like, whew. Very timely.
Prescient.
Yeah. Actually, I think
so much resonating.
They picked that I've read so far this year have been, like, really great. But,
like, what's the one that we read, like, right when the pandemic
was started? Yeah. The queer love triangle.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where everybody is contagious and dying. Yeah.
The Island of Disease or something.
Yeah.
Actually, I went and watched Annihilation after that, Amanda. And
oh, yeah?
So related. They are so similar.
They are.
But that movie made me more willing to be able to, like, digest that movie, though. Because I think I would have been too scared to watch it otherwise.
Yeah. It was a weird one.
Well, do you want to move on to the main course?
Yeah.
Cool. The main course food is frozen Stouffer's and the grandparents' house. There's, like, a running theme of the Stouffer's food that they eat, frozen enchiladas, a number of other things. And then there's 10 p.m. chocolate chip mint ice cream, which her mom, who's a single parent, like, comes home from her shift as a nurse and, like, had a bad day and immediately goes and, like, eats the chocolate chip mint ice cream out of the freezer, out of the container, which I really loved that.
That's great. And I liked her mom. I thought she was a really interesting character. We don't, like, get a lot of YA moms because they're usually dead, but this one was, like, actively a good presence in her daughter's life and cared about her and supported her while still having her own life. I thought that was kind of cool.
I stopped watching Gilmore Girls after Rory went to college, but I got a very strong Gilmore Girls vibe whenever her and her mom went to dinner at the grandparents' house.
Yeah.
It was sort of like the prim and proper grandparents and their, like, rebel daughter or whatever. And I was just like, okay, all right. I could see it.
I liked how their relationship shifted over the book, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like, they both learned and, like, came to an understanding without a major, like, I hate you, you know? Like, I appreciated that because that felt really real to me.
The whole book felt real to me. Like, all the relationships in it felt real. Like, the jealousy that her best friend has over her, like, getting to know the new girl, that felt like mm-hmm. completely something that would happen. And you could see her best friend trying to be, like, cool about it, but not really being cool about it.
Yeah, and her, like, trying to keep the peace. I'm like, I made sure to sit next to Claudia every day.
Right. Oh, man, those little friendship politics.
Did you say she was a high school teacher? Because that makes sense to me.
Yes, the author is a high school English teacher.
And it feels, like, very lived in of the, like, actual teen experience. That totally makes sense to me.
It does. I just thought the teachers were a little stereotypical, like, high school teachers who are like, here, kids, read these pages while I take a nap at my desk. I'm like, I teach second grade. I don't get to sit all day. Like, what is this? My desk has a chair? Like, nobody's ever seen my ass. Like, I'm always up and walking around and, like, helping kids and doing this. And, like, I don't know. High school
teachers. I did have high school teachers like that, though. I had a health teacher, Mr. Tobolsky, who would just show us movies, and they would say they related in some way to health. Like, we'd say, Lorenzo's Oil. Well, this kid has a disease, so it's sort of related to health. Rudy. Well, it's about building self-confidence and teamwork, which is related to health. Like, we watched at least 10 movies my freshman year. Crazy. And he would just sit there and...
I had this teacher my senior year who all she did was put notes on the overhead projector and we had to copy it down word for word.
I did have a middle school teacher who did that, although she, like, handwrote her notes on the board ahead of time, and, like, half the class was spent, like, copying down her notes, but then, you know, we also, like, talked and had a discussion about them, but it was just, we had to copy her notes exactly. It was,
yeah,
very strange now that I think about it.
It's not learning, and I, like, I was not having it. I actually, the most trouble I ever got in was in that class. Because I just couldn't. I was like, you're wasting my mind.
Yeah.
I'm bored out of my mind. I can't. Why not just hand us the fucking notes? It was literally, I was like, if you want us to have these, just copy it and give it to us, and then let's get on with it.
Ugh. There is some value in like writing things out by hand in terms of like helping cement it in your memory, but not like that.
Right.
Yeah. I just was like, I acted out so badly in that class and got away with it. It was just ridiculous. She looked like a rat. I don't remember her actual name. But I know that she had a little rat face. That's all I remember.
So Mrs. Templeton then?
Yeah.
I was thinking Principal Ratburn. Was it Arthur? Yeah. Anyway.
Well, the topics I have here are activist tactics, zines, exclamation point, and
not newsletters. But whatever.
And like a flat power structure. But yeah, activist tactics. I mean, this book really gives you, like, Amanda, to your point, like the secret code, and then how that's been Brit's like example of how that's happened in history, you know, like that is so smart. That is a way to talk about power. And I think that's kind of, I mean, Twitter is similar, right? There's definitely other things that people have been talking about, like now using Signal because it's not something that can be litigated and things like that. But there is, like, the activist tactics in this book, as demonstrated, are like kind of what we're seeing play out, right? Like, we're all going to come to school in our bathrobes.
Yeah.
We're going to walk out. Like, that's what's happening now. And it's powerful, especially when students do that work.
Yeah. I love how it grew, too. It went from, like, just doodles on the hands, which, like, anybody could see and just be like, okay, they're bored in class and drawing on their hands or whatever. And it's easy to hide if, you know, you need to put your hands in your lap or whatever. And then it was, lots of people wearing bathrobes to school. That's weird. And then it was like, where are they all going? They're walking out. You know, like, it just grew from, like, sort of, it had to, like, gain momentum. And, yeah, I just, like, the progression of that was really, I like that. It was well done.
Because it was just not about recognizing that something was being done wrong, but that other people were with you on that.
Yeah.
And the growing of support. Yeah.
Yeah, when the popular girl or whatever, when she walked out, and like called out the rapist asshole principal's son and like revealed that she did the flyer, I was just like, yeah. Because like when she like got up there and gave that like placating speech or whatever, and was just like, this is not ladylike, guys, come on. I'm like, oh no, traitor. But then like looking back on it after, like, you know, her revealing her story, like I can see like her being just made to do that. Okay, super 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 problematic show, but I watched 13 Reasons Why. It's awful. Don't watch it without a parent or an adult present. The one of the main girls who started like a group on campus to call out like the boys and their, you know, rape apologist behavior and shit like that, like the principal like kind of talks her into going along with what he wants her to do so she doesn't ruffle feathers, kind of thing. So like she like organized a big protest and it got a lot of attention, and he's like, okay, well, we can't have that, so how about you just, you know, lay low and, you know, nobody has to know that we're working together, kind of like. And that, it just reminded me of that.
That must sort of happen a lot.
Well, I mean, it's really easy to do to a girl like that student. She was like a very like top of the class student, wasn't she? And she clearly had dreams and plans that she had been working towards. It's really easy to blackmail kids like that. Like, you're just holding your future over them.
Yeah.
That's reminding me of, I recently, it was so long, I don't think I read through everything. And also I'm trying not to like completely inundate myself with trauma, but there's a really interesting long form article about the Harvard, what was it? Astrology program? Not astrology.
Astronomy.
Astronomy. Physics. I can't remember exactly, but
it's Pisces energy here.
There's like no women. There's like one woman tenured professor, and this history of the three professors who've been like head of the department, and they're like constant abuse of the young women in the program, and just like how it was endemic and systemic and across the board. And like they would hold recommendations over their head. Like a lot of the way they got them to do what they wanted was like they were so powerful in the world in that subject that you basically had to kowtow to them if you wanted a recommendation, like if you wanted a job.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what the principal does. He's like, he's withholding her recommendation for college.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh man, it's just such an abuse of power.
My best friend is a mathematician, she's a math professor. And when she was a student, she was applying to some internship and her math professor gave her a letter of recommendation. I told her to read it and she's like, I'm not supposed to read it. I'm like, girl, I will sign that envelope. You need to read it. And he said, she's a very good student, but I know that somebody else is applying for this internship and I hope you give it to them because I think they're smarter than her. And it was like a boy that he had said that. I think that he's better suited, better equipped. And she was like, she's a genius. Like, I'm not even saying she's my best friend. She's a genius mathematician. And like,
why fucking bother to write a letter of recommendation just to go out of your way to not recommend the person? Just say no. Just say no when they ask. Like, it conveys the same message.
Well, he liked her. He just, you know, thought this boy would be better suited to it, just had maybe more of the capacity to do it. Like, it's just that subtle. He probably doesn't think he's sexist. He probably thinks it was just this individual thing and not because she's like a brown lady. Like, it's crazy.
The fact that in this book it was the principal's son, too, who, like, was the ringleader in all of this shit definitely plays a role in, like, the power structure. Like, at my school, one time, the principal's son came to school high on shrooms during finals.
Oh, my God.
During finals. Idea. Yeah, got caught, obviously, because he was not subtle. And, obviously, the principal is, like, one of the members of the disciplinary board. So what happens to this kid? Nothing. Like, the principal made a big show of, like, you know, recusing himself from the committee because of a conflict of interest. But the fact that, like, this kid was just, like, what, got, like, a temporary probation or some shit, and that's all? Like, come on.
I mean, like punishments at my school were completely handled along class lines.
Mm.
Like, rich mm-hmm. kids got, like, maybe detention, and then poor kids, they would just expel them.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Crazy.
You know, maybe it's not a bad thing that our education system is being flipped. I mean, I do think it exacerbates class and race and privilege issues, you know, like not having access to a computer, having
mm-hmm.
people, siblings or parents who need access to like the one computer, not having
mm-hmm.
not having your own room where you can quietly do your work, you know, like all of that stuff. That's about money. And
oh, so many equity issues in yeah. doing distance learning. Yeah. Yeah.
But
internet, computer, whose parents have the time and resources to help them, especially in elementary where like kids need help logging on.
Yeah.
And then like we were told to like not make kids turn on their camera if they want to keep it off because like some kids might be embarrassed of like their house or whatever. Yeah. But then you don't know who's there and who's paying attention. And, you know, it's such a mess.
Yeah. And when I think about that, I think about like even in class, there's no way to make a kid pay attention if they really don't want to, right?
Right.
So, like they're going to choose to be engaged or not, no matter what the method is. And I'm wondering if like maybe this just clears things up for people, you know? I don't know. It's going to be real different. This world should be real different, but I'm hoping that we're like bending towards justice and not bending towards autocracy, which I'm so scared of.
Yeah, really.
We don't have to talk about that. Let's talk about zines.
I didn't find out about zines until zines were well over, and I felt robbed of the opportunity because I would like some zines and making those. I liked making collages in high school and writing angry poetry, so I feel like I would have been a preeminent zine maker.
Yeah, you had both. You had both of the things. You just had to put it together. I had a friend who did zines who I met in high school, and they had a zine. But like that relationship was weird. It was like before social media and cell phones, and so we like couldn't keep it up because we didn't go to the same school. We lived in really different parts of Seattle. And so, like,
I liked her. She was cool, but like it was hard to continue the relationship. But I don't know. I have some zines now in the house that I've just like collected. Random Oakland really likes zines. So every once in a while I'll run into some zines at like a bar or something. And I was at my friend's house and she'd made a little zine called like How to Be a Good Neighbor. And so I have that at the house and it's basically like, don't call the cops on your fucking neighbor. And my friend is like a white lady and she made this zine and it's a one page like foldy thing. You know, sometimes zines I've seen have like staples, or you got to go get them photocopied or whatever, but hers was this little one pager and I was like, oh, this is cool. So when shelter in place hit and I was like kind of freaking out a little bit, I just started collaging and making weird art, and then I just like walked my way into zines, not intentionally at all, just like totally randomly. And then started reading this book and was like, ah, I understand.
Well, it was so cool that like, so this girl who was sort of like mild mannered and didn't really know how to speak up for herself, I like how she was able to look at someone else's work and take from it in order to like find her voice. Like she sort of just copied it initially, which is fine, because she's like, this is what I want to do, but I don't know how. But then it started getting more creative as more people got involved. That's really cool.
And then other people did the same thing. Like she did the first few zines, not newsletters. Oh my God. She did the first few zines, but then I can't remember.
It was her friend.
Lucy?
Oh, she did the poster.
Lucy, who did the bake sale, and then Kira did the arts and crafts thing, and then Emma did the last poster or whatever that led to the walkout, and like other people did the same thing, right? They took like her idea. So it started off as her idea, but then it grew into like everybody's collective movement, which was cool.
It's a really good DIY spirit. Like you don't have to be an expert at something to try it and to put your voice out there. And I think that's kind of important for kids. This book is actually on how to protest and like maybe even how to like think about protesting. Find your way towards it.
Yeah, like when you see an injustice, what are things you can do? And it like I've always, you know, I'm so tied to art, right? But like to how the art is the thing that brings the injustice to light and like lets them collectively like move forward.
I like that when after she talked to Kira and Kira sort of called her out on like her white privilege, the next issue of the she said something like I think like, you know, having other voices, you know, of other women will like make the Moxie movement even stronger or whatever. And then the next issue of the zine had a Black Rosie the Riveter on it. I was like, yay. Because it did, because like, you know when that shit just feels performative and when it's like authentic. And because she had like come to that realization and that like commitment to like do better and be more inclusive, like it didn't feel like, you know, for example, ABC having a Black Bachelor, like, look what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, it did not feel like that. It felt like this is representative of the changes that we're going to make going forward.
Yeah, not performative. And I think what it demonstrated is like how to learn and be better, right?
Yeah, like how to get like something you didn't notice pointed out to you and not freak out about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is a good lesson for kids. Like
how to not get defensive and how to just be like, oh, I didn't know that. Now that I do, here's how I be inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Not that hard. But, oh, and then I liked how, I mean, you all brought up how, like, different people did it, which leads into the, like, flat power structure. This is actually something that I've been seeing more and more, especially in organizations, how instead of having a hierarchy where there's a leader and the singular decision maker followed by the two confidants or the people in power who have these, it's like a flat, there's no one person in charge, which allows space for different types of leadership and different voices and like in my mind a stronger movement, because like if you have one singular person and they do something that's not aligned or perhaps get assassinated, as we've seen this country do over and over again with our civil rights leaders, like once you take people out who's at kind of like a top position, things fall apart. And if you want to be strong and sustainable, you kind of need a
collective, and that people feel empowered to do so and to move it forward rather than like waiting for someone to tell them what's next. Mm-hmm. Like, no, you get to decide what's next. You know, one of the podcasts I listen to talks about how like no one's going to save you. Like, we have to save ourselves, mm-hmm. you know, and that means you directly have to take action. You have to decide what that is for yourself and how you're going to do it. You're not going to wait for someone to like give you the manual. I think book club kind of moved towards a flat power structure. But we do have like a gap in leadership and we're like not really, we're meeting.
Yeah, this is, when I say book club, Garrett knows that this is what I mean now. The three of us doing the podcast. Oh, do you have book club tomorrow? Like, the new book club.
I mean, we're talking about the books, it's book club.
Right, I think it counts.
Totally.
Be the book club you want to see.
Do either of you have other like experiences or examples that you've seen? Because I think most of us are like back to like white supremacy and patriarchy. Like, we're used to like the man in charge, whatever that looks like. Even in my government role, it's a woman in charge, but man, does she uphold white supremacy.
So a little bit of a different example, but I'm just thinking of like in the classroom. Sometimes like when we have certain discussions, and it depends on the group of kids and it depends on, you know, like the vibe or whatever, but my favorite discussions are always ones where I am like a facilitator and not like a director. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to set expectations and boundaries ahead of time. So like step up, step back is a big one that I talk about with my kids. So step up if you're not like making your voice heard. And if you find yourself talking a lot, step back and let someone else take charge. And so I've done discussions like that. And I've even done it like popcorn style. So where the kids don't have to raise their hand, they can just chime in. But like, we talk about what to do if two people start to talk at the same time. Like, what are you going to do if that happens? Oh, one person can say you go and then I'll go, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And when it works really well. And like the kids, like you can see the like agency that they have over their own learning. And it's just really great.
Great. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So cool. I wish we'd had conversations like that in my school.
It's hard. It depends on the group of kids, because like, but when I've been able to do it, it's gone well. Like, and then like there's times when everybody's just talking over each other and I'm like, this isn't working. We'll try it again later in the year when you're more mature. Yeah.
What about you, Amanda? Do you have an example?
I can't think of anything. I mean, I've already discussed my high school, which is pretty much flat power structure. And then I went to law school. It was exactly the same thing. It was like the strongest speak up and yell at each other and everybody else just they're bored. Yeah. And I guess the only job I've had where there was sort of like give and take, I worked at a federal courthouse with a judge and another co-clerk, and he was really good about letting us lead discussions and listening to us as well as us listening to him. But that was pretty unusual, I think.
Yeah, I've been struggling with how I make space for other people, because I know I have a very strong voice. I have very strong opinions. I'm not afraid to speak up. I have had this happen multiple times where like I'll get loud and my boss will come to me and be like, actually, she had this like principal conversation, like, I need you to be on board, right? Like with me, you know, like worried that I was inciting people to revolution. I'm like, no, it's already here. But I like said, I got really loud in the last staff meeting I participated in, and I actually got like tone policed during the meeting. But like every time I've said something, I've had other people come up to me and be like, you said what needed to be said. And so I haven't like anointed myself as the speaker, but I'm bad at sitting in silence, and I don't have much patience when we're like going around and around in circles around an issue. I'm like, well, I'll just say it out loud. Why can't we just name it, you know? But I'm like working really hard on making sure I'm not taking up all the air in the room.
Yeah. And that can be difficult when you know you're helping people who don't want to speak up, but they need to sort of learn to speak up. So It's good.
Do you think that being white and being read as a woman plays a part in that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And also just, like, not being afraid of speaking in a group. Like, when we were in the room together, like, a staff meeting is, like, 35 people. You know, there are people who just, like, don't like to speak in public. But I have practiced over and over again. I've been in, you know, I've done those public meetings where I'm, like, literally all eyes are on me and I have to, like, speak. And I know what that feels like. So, and when it's more formal, yes, I still get scared. Right. But when it's just staff, I'm like, there's no one even in the audience here. Like, what y'all worried about? But, you know, and I'll stand by what I say. I don't feel like I have to have perfectly practiced language. Right. I don't think I have to have the exact right thing. I feel like it's okay to process while I speak aloud. And other people, even like Jamile, he really, really does a lot of work in his head before he ever says anything out loud. Mm-hmm. Because he gets anxious about him not saying things the right way. And that's absolutely, I think, about him being Black, you know, like, mm-hmm. he needs to say it in the way for people to hear him. And I'm like, y'all gonna hear me.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I've definitely had many moments at work where, like, I would say something and it would get shut down, and then someone else who is white or whatever would say it, and people would listen, and I'm like, I just said that, okay? Or like, where even if I didn't, like, I knew that if I were to do that, I wouldn't be able to get away with it, but like a colleague would. So yeah, it's just something I'm always like hyper aware of. And I really like that the main character in this book, like, started off not being, and then it was brought to her attention, and then she was, because it really is, like you said, not that hard.
Right. Especially if you're pushing for justice in one area, to not be able to see your own behavior and the behavior of the people that you're pushing to give you more justice.
And then it was also reflected in the way that she reacted to Sean, too, when he was just like, well, not all guys, blah, blah, blah. And she's just like, no, you're not included in the all guys, but you are a guy and you just don't fucking get it.
Right.
Like, that might be hard to hear, but it is what it is. Like, let's reckon with that. So,
yeah.
I mean, that was a good primer, too, like, because she did not just be like, whatever, for the cute new boy, or let that influence her talking back to him, which I thought was good, again, role modeling in the book.
Yeah.
Well, and she did, she was quiet, and then she thought about what she had to say, and then she came out with it, right? I think, mm-hmm. I think this book is really good at, like, showing people who might be scared or nervous or unfamiliar or unpracticed how to practice. I love that. You know, like, one of those things I'm practicing, Britt, to your point, is, like, when I see that happening in a meeting, I sometimes will parody it back and be like, so-and-so just said this. Or like, as you know, so-and-so does this work. And I'm just like, so I'll like say the thing, but I'll be like, this came from this colleague. This came from this colleague. These people are sitting at the table with you.
And that's like using your privilege for good. Like, you know, amplifying other people's voices. Like, that is why we need like white people to join in the Black Lives Matter movement. Cause we've been screaming this shit from the rooftops for a zillion years. And nobody, you know, I read a tweet that said something like, white people were treated like Black people by the police for 1 week for like change to have to be made. And like, that really is it.
It's like, kind of funny though. I've been seeing like in my own community, like my sister-in-law, when Michael Brown was murdered, put a lot of Blue Lives Matter stuff up. And now with George Floyd's death, she's like, this is wrong. I can't believe I didn't see it before. This is completely fucked up and you can't do this anymore. And she's been posting like really actively in her social media. She's from Jacksonville, from like a like lower middle class white family. And like, she's getting a lot of pushback from people, but I think people are starting to have those discussions.
I saw a thread by a Filipina woman, I think, who like talked about anti-Black racism in Asian communities, and yeah, I've had a lot of discussions with Yvonne about this stuff too, but like, she just talked about how she had to unlearn a lot of that shit, and she's like, you know, I'm writing this thread for like other Asians, like call it out in your families and your communities when you see it or whatever. And then, like, I was reading the comments and a black woman said, like, what is the point of this or whatever? And I'm like, or like, and I'm like, she just said it to educate, like, other Asian people, like, on how to unlearn and call out, like, anti-black racism when you see it. So, like, yeah, we need, like, allies to do this work, too. Mm-hmm. Like, it can't just be us. So
really, it's amazing to me. I've been listening to too many podcasts, but I picked up this new one recently. I think it's either the What a Day or Code Switch one, but one, I think it might have been Code Switch, which is NPR, but they interviewed this woman who's like a sociologist or something who had written this article in March about how with the pandemic and shutdown and the disparate resource distribution that we're primed for riots, essentially, like protests and riots, and then like listed all these examples of how pandemics are specifically tied to protests and people getting into the street because of the way it exacerbates injustice, essentially. Mm-hmm. And had a list of ones starting from like the 1700s and how they've gone, like every time we have a pandemic, this happens. And I was like, why does it take, I mean, it's, you know, she listed out all these things and like how it's kind of like a fight or flight response. Like once you're in a fear-based decision-making process, like you have the same concerns, the same goals, the same like injustice that you're all seeing. Like that's a prime kind of like fire starter for activist movements. And I was like, wow, it takes us being sick in order for us to like address these underlying things in our.
Well, it's interesting because like you can't do anything about the pandemic really, but this is something you can actually try to do something about. Maybe that's a control thing. I don't know.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And, you know, one of the examples she gave was the recent Ebola breakout in Libya. And I really just missed this whole thing the way, you know, everyone's talking about how Obama handled this and how he did such a good job of handling the Ebola breakout. And I think I just don't pay enough to attention to world events. Sometimes I get lost. And also, you know, it's not like Africa's really covered in our news, right? But apparently they like, all these people in the capital, I think, of Libya, like woke up one morning and were under lockdown, like not allowed to leave. And then the injustice that caused them to go into the streets was they saw a government official get escorted out. And so the like this person has more privilege than the rest of you. You are on lockdown. And they just like went out into the streets, protested. And of course that ended up spreading Ebola. But like, what do you expect? You can't have a visual representation of injustice and with all of these people watching and think that something's not going to happen. I still think that I get frustrated that we have to watch and consume Black Death in order to do something about it. Like, I can't watch those videos at all.
Yeah. When I was, for the last week of school, and when I was talking to my students about this, I was like, it's not that we haven't talked about race and stuff before. It's just, it was so prevalent and so, like, I'm like, I can't, I know they're only 8, but I can't let, you know, this last week of school go by without like not talking about it. Like, this is super important. And
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, Tamir Rice was only 12, right? When he was shot, right. Like,
right.
Doesn't align them. So
yeah. And that's something I told my kids too. I'm like, you know, for a lot of you, like it might be like, okay, cool. We talked about this in the classroom and now we're done. But for people who look like me, like this is our reality and something that we have to think about every day. So I don't want you to like leave class thinking like we talked about it and we're done and this is only something we learned in school. Like, look for it around you and like notice it in, you know, how you treat other people. And, you know,
I mean, the entirety of my curriculum as a student was about how racism used to be bad but now it's not and it's solved.
Yeah, and that's something I had to challenge my students on too, because they're like, well, a long time ago racism was blah blah. I'm like, yes,
a long time ago. You mean like yesterday?
Yeah,
it's crazy. Like,
but also,
that was just really the message that we were getting. Like, isn't it great that America came together and solved racism? Mm-hmm. It's nuts. And I mean, I know I'm kind of old, so my curriculum was a while ago. I hope things are changing, and that's not the same thing kids in Ohio are still learning. But
no, I've seen some excerpts from the textbooks, but like that's intentional, right? That is absolutely intentional. It's to keep people quiet.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like learning so many things that I'm like furious that I never knew or was never taught or whatever, because like, look at who gets to tell history. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I just, like, the NHL just tweeted yesterday that like Black people essentially invented hockey, and I was like, excuse me? What? I've been a hockey fan like my whole life, and hockey is one of like the second whitest sport after NASCAR, and I'm just learning about this? Like, what the fuck? Like, the colored leagues or whatever existed years and years and years before the Negro Leagues of baseball, but it was like the Negro Leagues of hockey.
Wow.
And I'm like, this is unbelievable that I'm just learning this today. Like,
wow. It's wild.
I mean, at this point, I'm pretty sure that Black people invented everything, and like, white people just took credit for most of it. Not all of this. I wanted to share one story. It's a little bit traumatic, so I'll say that at the beginning. But I have my direct supervisor now has two kids in school, and one of them is in high school. And the last day of class, their teacher actually showed the video of George Floyd, which I can't even imagine watching. I mean, I can't watch it, you know, period.
So, I haven't watched it. I'm not going to.
I mean, I don't think you should have to watch someone die to know that people are killed by police, but she showed it in the classroom, and there's only one Black student in the class. And I was just like, and you know, my supervisor's telling me this, we were having a conversation. She was like, yeah, you know, my daughter came home, like ended school. And I was like, oh, what did you do today? And she's like, we watched the video. And I was just like, what?
Oh, that's where I was going with this. So like when I was talking to my second graders about it, and I was researching like, how, you know, what can I do that's accessible to second grade to like talk about this, and you know, Viacom, I think, and like the stations that they owned, they showed a commercial that was 8 minutes and 46 seconds long, because that's how long the police officer's knee was on George Floyd's neck, and it was just the sounds of breathing.
Oh God.
Oof. And a black screen for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. But they showed it on like Nickelodeon was one of the channels that showed it, and I'm like, so I watched it, and I'm like, I'm gonna show this video to my kids, and like, we're gonna talk about how it felt like to they're 8, so they can't sit still. So I had them we talked about protests, and we watched, and we looked at some pictures of protest signs, and so I had them like make their own protest sign like while the video was playing. But I guess I was talking to my mom about it, and she misunderstood, and she thought I was going to show them the George Floyd video. Yeah. And she was just like, oh my god, don't you think that's like too much for second graders? I'm like, no. I'm like, it's not that big of a deal. It's like, whatever. And then like, and she's just like, are you sure? I don't know if that's appropriate. I'm like, they showed it on Nickelodeon. And so then the next day she was like, oh yeah, no, you should do it. Because she had almost at this point like talked me out of showing it and convinced me that it would be too traumatic for them. I'm like, a black screen for 8 minutes? Okay. And so then the next day she's like, oh, that video. Oh, that's totally fine. That's great. That's a really good conversation starter. I'm like, what did you think I was talking about? And she's like, the video of George Floyd being murdered. I'm like, are you crazy?
I'm not going to show us that film to second graders.
I would never. What is wrong with you? Why would you think that I would show that?
And then someone actually did. So.
Right?
Which is like, no.
I mean, my same senior class with my rat face teacher, it was basically like about genocide. They called it senior connections, but a lot of what we talked about were like world issues, past, you know, probably like the 50s, past civil rights era. And so we looked at the Rwanda killing field. We looked at Rwanda, and we looked at Cambodia, and we looked at the Israel-Palestine conflict. And it was like supposed to give us perspective on the world, but a lot of it was just like, people are killing each other for these reasons. Mm-hmm. And we watched a movie, a documentary about Pol Pot, but we had to sign they sent us home with a permission slip for our parents to sign it because of how graphic that genocide is. And I mean, I'm pretty sure I would have wanted a teacher to tell me they were going to show a video of George Floyd dying, like any person dying. That's a snuff film. I'm sorry.
And
that's like a
white death is not shown like that.
Right.
Like, we are spared from that, or it's like their dignity, or like it's not appropriate. So why is it appropriate when it's someone who's not white?
It's not. It reminds me of those images of Black people being lynched and all the white people celebrating and taking pictures like it's a fucking picnic. You know, it's like, that's what it reminds me of.
Which is also still happening in the year of our Lord Beyonce 2020.
Oh, I love that. Year of our Lord Beyonce. Yeah.
Shit is fucked.
It's so fucked. But I'm like, it's fucked, but at least we're all talking about it now. We're not pretending it's not happening. I think you can't pretend it's not happening anymore. I think even as recent as 6 months ago, you could pretend this wasn't happening. There were people who could do that. But like, Amanda, to the point of your sister-in-law, like, you literally can't pretend anymore. And like, people are learning. What we're going to do with that knowledge is yet to be seen.
Right.
But I just think about the fact that, like, my sister-in-law is 42, 43, but she has a 17-year-old and a 13-year-old and a 9-year-old. And their mom used to think this way about this, but now she thinks this way about this. And I'm hoping that'll do good things for them. Like,
yeah.
But I don't know that it will, you know? Like,
I was honestly expecting a little pushback from parents for talking, like, just frankly about, you know, systemic racism, but the only parents who said something to me, it was all positive. It was like, it was all parents of white kids who were like, I know that these are important discussions, I just didn't know how to start it, so thank you for starting the conversation. And like, I'm like, please continue the work, like, you know. So it's, yeah, I hope that too, because I know that other teachers of younger kids, one of the kindergarten teachers, like, has gotten pushback from parents when she has talked to her students about stuff, and it's always like from white parents who are like, oh, they're too young, blah blah, and she's like, well, Black kids aren't too young, this is their reality. So like, you know, so yeah.
Well, do we want to talk about desserts?
Yeah.
I have illicit bake sale goodies, lemon bars and magic squares, and the downfall of the patriarchy.
I love the bake, the bake sale, but the event, the arts and crafts fair thing that Kira put on, there was a line that I highlighted that said something like, about like the way that girls dance when they know that no boys are watching and they can take up all the space they want.
Yeah.
Like, yes. I love that.
I always was like anti all girl events because I hated, I mean, I had had bad experiences with girls being bullied, but I think if I had had an experience like that where it's about like coming together over a mutual like need to have a space where it's safe, a safe space, that I would have like really loved that. I wish that that had existed. We never had any like all girl events in school, and I think I would have avoided them if we had, you know.
I think like we've already sort of addressed this, but like something that the book did really well, like in terms of intersectionality, was not like the way that it's approached sometimes, which is the wrong way, is like, well, we're all women, so the rest of it shouldn't matter. Mm. It was like, we're all women and we're coming together across different like social hierarchies and different races and different classes, like acknowledging those things and that that's part of what makes us a stronger group, not like put your woman identity above your other ones, because I see it addressed that way a lot and that just is not feasible. I've probably talked about this before, but we had this horrible, awkward, like, equity training at school one time at work. Yeah. And we had to pick one of our identities and line up in a row from most to least privileged.
What?
And I'm like, I'm a Black queer woman. Which one am I supposed to pick? No. I don't understand. So, like, all of the Black women were at the end of the line. And, like, the white men were at the other side. And then the white women. And then, like, Asian women somewhere in between. We have one white gay male teacher who made a big show of marching all the way down the line past all the Black women and out the door.
Wow.
And I'm just like, are you fucking kidding me right now? And like, the reason he could do that was because the presenter said pick one of your identities, so he picked gay. Mm. And because his other identities are white and cis and male, he has those to fall back on, right? Like, if you are privileged in one area and not another, you can always fall back on that other one, especially because, like,
gay isn't something that people automatically see.
Exactly. Exactly. So, like, the fact, oh my god.
I can't believe everybody didn't walk out, because what a stupid exercise to try to make someone pick, like, this is my thing. Well, how can you do that?
Awkward. Well, that's automatically anti-intersectional, right? It automatically leaves out the concept of intersectionality.
Right. And then when she, like, called on us to explain why we were there in line, like, all of the Black women were like, well, we're both. Like, we can't separate it. So, like, that's why we're here. But he was just like, oh, gay. Like, I win the Oppression Olympics and marched out the door.
Oh my god.
So cringe.
Yeah. I love the scene where she walks out at the end and catches the girls making out.
Yes!
I'm not gonna tell anybody.
I mean, that was my favorite. Also, I would love to catch more people making out. But...
You're like, this is a YA novel, right? Every time I turn a corner, I should be catching someone making out.
Yes. Yeah, that was great. She's like, I'm just taking out the trash. And they're like, we were just,
being awesome. Yeah.
And I like, they organized it all themselves and they did it all themselves. Again, just like showing young people how they can do this work. They don't need adults. You don't need adults. And in fact, you can do the work better in a lot of ways because you know what's more important to you.
And I really did think she was going to tell her mom, because I'm like, her mom would totally be down for it, you know? Mm-hmm. But then I liked her reasoning behind why she did it. She was just like, you know, because this is like our thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a good thing for me learning this is like, you can let kids have their thing. You don't have to know everything about them. You don't have to like helicopter them or like... Mm-hmm. be watching all the time. Like, they, in order to learn to be autonomous and their own adults and their own critically thinking people, you have to let them do these things and like take the risks, and they learn from them.
Yeah, I really like that her mom didn't tell her like yes or no when she asked like, should I participate in the walkout?
Mm-hmm. Because that's something to consider, like, can you change an institution or would you be better served by leaving it and using like your ticket out and just putting up with it until you can go? I feel like that's for a lot of high school students on their mind all the time.
Yeah.
Am I actually allowed to have opinions or a stand about something?
Yeah. Because if she had said no, she said, like, I understand why you want to do it. I'm just worried. Like, and that was it. Like, if she had said no, you're going to get in trouble, then that would have been, like, shutting it down. If she had said, yeah, do it, then that would have been, like, her making the decision for her, and it would have, like, defeated the energy behind it. So... yeah.
Yeah, I really like that. And I liked that they kind of subverted, like, baking is a woman's work. And then they, like, used it to fight the system.
Yeah.
Give us your dollars for these delicious biscuits. I'll use it to take you down.
Lemon squares of justice.
Oh, I love that. Well, the last topic on here is drinks, which I have a spiked lemonade, which is they serve at the all-girls event. And then I have here different families. I think, again, this book gave us like a really good perspective on different types of families, especially when she, you know, she makes her new friend, they're living with her grandmother, you know, they're like, because of the like monetary and like racial divide there. And it, I thought that was a good example of like, you don't have to have someone reflect exactly your system in order to have community and friendship with them. You know, I think that's what this country is learning, I'm hoping. But like, I thought the book did a really good job of that, because, you know, of course we all at the beginning divide along similar lines, because usually we are with our parents and our parents are in a community that probably looks fairly similar to them. I mean, I know that's for me in my suburban community, there was no Asian, Latinx or Black families that we were friends with. There were Irish people. We went to like a St. Patrick's Day event. There were Jewish people. I've been to temple and like bat mitzvahs and bar mitzvahs, but like those folks are also white, you know, and we all lived in very similar like 2.5 kids bath houses. And yeah, I mean, we had a little less money, but we still like had our own rooms.
I really wish that we got to see Vivian and her mom have dinner with Sean and his parents. I think that would have been a really interesting scene to include. Like, they alluded to it. She was like, oh, like, Sean's parents, you know, when she got back and she was telling her mom about Sean's parents and, like, how they were intense, like, artist types from, like, Austin or whatever, and the mom's like, oh yeah, I know the type, and she's like, they want to have dinner with you and me, and then, like, I kind of was looking forward to that sort of culture clash, but oh well.
The mom versus mom conversation.
I mean, just the awkwardness.
Yeah, the awkwardness, and how that wasn't privileged, like, the artist parents weren't the best parents, the rich artist right. parents were not the best parents.
Mm-hmm.
Money and privilege and power does not a good parent make.
Yeah.
Everybody's parents are weird. It's good to know, right? Their own way.
Yeah. What did you guys think of the mom's boyfriend and that relationship?
Oh, settling. Girl, no.
Republican John.
I don't believe in interpolitical dating. I'm sorry. Take a firm stance against it.
I think that's I thought that was, like, very generational. Like, as you get older, your priorities change. You go from wanting to fight the complacency to looking for comfort. Mm-hmm. You know, she was like, he treats me well. We get along. You know, it's not about the revolution at that point. It's about, like, who's going to hold you up. Although I also agree with Amanda. I think there's always been a rule in my family. You can bring anyone home as long as they're not a Republican.
But I mean, there's always those people who say, like, oh, well, just because you have different political beliefs doesn't mean you can't be friends or can't have a relationship, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, if somebody else's political beliefs include seeing me as, like, less than, then there's a problem.
Like, I wonder what this mythical time was when political beliefs were so, like, minutia that it matter. You know what I mean? Like, where they're like, I feel like you should be taxed at 7%. Well, I feel like you should be taxed at 12%, and we can see eye to eye and still love each other. And I'm like, that's not how politics are. Never in my experience of politics.
Not so much.
Yeah, I recently posted on Facebook that I'd, like, unfriended some people who were following Donald Trump, and it looked like because they liked him, not just for information. I know there's a couple people who are following him because they're, like, media and political savvy people.
Right. Yeah.
But of course, those are all white dudes also, just, you know, that I saw. I was like, this is interesting. The people who are interested in the other side are white men.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, like, unfollowed some folks, and I had someone be like, but those are the people who should be listening to you. I'm like, well, then they can reach out. If they really want to talk to me, they can fucking reach out. Otherwise, like, it's not enough to just not be like, very obviously racist. I need people to be anti-racist.
I've got another meme to share that is related. I'm looking for it on my phone right now. But it's, like, something about playing devil's advocate. I'm going to find it.
Did you see that awful tweet by the dude who was, like, giving examples on how to be an asshole in a racial equity training?
Oh, no.
Yeah. He was like, ask really direct questions, you know. Let them say some stupid things, but the point is to waste their time. And I'm like, oh my God, if you ever showed up to my meeting, I would rip you a new one, dude. Like, and it's fine. You can get me on video calling your ass out. He was like, yeah, record them. And I'm just like, who are you? And why are you doing this?
Ugh. Have you seen the thing that's went around now with the guy yelling at the lady at a state meeting?
No, at a state Mm-mm. meeting?
Where? Or at some sort of government meeting. He gets up.
You called her out for shopping?
Yes! The Connie, you need to leave here, Connie. You're not interested in doing your job. That was amazing. It was cracking me up so hard.
And then it was the picture of her fucking shopping in the public meeting, no less.
That's crazy.
So, it's this picture of, like, a smiling white dude. And it says, hi, I'm a white dude who likes to play devil's advocate because other people's struggles are theoretical to me. It's fun. It's fun to debate their right to equality. While we're here, I would like to center my voice and perspective about a cause that means nothing to me. I'm here to take up all the oxygen in the room and exhaust people who are trying to fight against injustice so that we can maintain the status quo, which serves me. I have no interest in learning. Your frustration is my ultimate goal. Let's engage.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Like, they like to see you mad. I mean, that is one of the things I learned, is, like, they want to see you mad. And I'm just like, I don't know. That just really bothers me. I was feeling that a lot when I was working at the testing site in San Francisco. All of these dudes, mainly white dudes on bikes over a certain age, would come over and, like, want to ask me all the questions. And I'm like, here's the poster with all of the answers. Like, literally standing next to me is the poster with all of the answers. And then I'd be like, oh yeah, here's the poster, or check, be like, oh, check the website. And one guy like asked me, I'm like, I don't know, but the website changes every day. He was like, you should do your job better. I lost my shit. I called him a fucking asshole. I did. I was like, this is my job. And then he started, like, the first thing he did was walk up to me and take his mask down. You know?
Oh no.
Bippity boppity back the fuck up.
Yep. So then he's like, once he said you should know your job better, I'm like, this is my job. And he's like, I'm gonna report you. And he's like walking away, yelling at me while he's, you know, having this conversation. He's like, I'm gonna report you. I'm like, report me to whom? And he's like, I know. I was like, he's like, I work for the city. I'm like, I do too. I got that same email. There's a website. Like, I just, I don't know.
What's the,
the end? I was like, maybe you should not be a fucking asshole. I don't know. Yeah.
What's the dude equivalent of a Karen?
But so many would get upset when I didn't want to answer their questions. Like, they really wanted me to do the labor for them. And I'm like, there is literally a fucking website where all your questions can be answered. Or there's this poster where all of the information you're asking me.
I need to, like, practice more at situations where this is going to occur. Like, I was in the park the other day and I took a walk and I was really tired and I looked at the view for a little bit and then I just took out my phone to check something. And I had some old man come by maskless, tell me that, like, I wasn't enjoying my life right. And, like, being on my
what the fuck?
And I should be looking at this view and, like, I'm just so wrapped up in my little world. And I was just like, what? And by the time I thought of anything, he had walked away and I just sat there mad for the rest of the whole day. Cause I wasn't primed. I need to be primed to respond like you. And I should have said, fuck you.
I am also not good at that. I'm like the person who thinks of a comeback like in the middle of the night. And I'm like, damn it.
I mean, I do think of better comebacks later, but I am not afraid to tell someone they're an asshole. I have done it many a time.
I'm only like, if I'm already in the moment, like, and I've been primed to do it, then maybe a little bit. But if it comes out of nowhere when I'm doing something else, I'm just like, and I stutter and I hate that. I want to stand up. So I appreciate you. I'm going to be trying to like that more often.
I think I'm just like, my patience is so thin. I'm like literally ready to pop off. Because I've actually been practicing like not letting them get me mad because I get mad so easily. I've been working on like my breathing exercises.
I just want to point out though that like that's a privilege thing, right? Like if I were to get mad and snap in somebody's face, I'm the angry black woman and then nothing I say matters because they've already labeled me, right?
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
No, there was actually a situation that happened like that at the testing facility where there was a black woman at front. She was younger and she told the guy what he was supposed to do. And then he immediately did the opposite thing. And then our supervisor, another black woman, started talking to him and was like, you need to do the thing that we told you to do. And he started yelling at her. And my like racism radar is like really primed right now. So I like whipped my head around and I was like, that reeks of racism. And I just like start walking over there. I was like, dude, you need to get in line. I was like, you need to check in first. And he's like, where's the check-in? And I'm like, right there. And like, as soon as I told him to do it.
Right.
And I went over to her. I was like,
but not surprising.
Like, I was just about to call security. I'm like, you can always call me. Like, you can always have me come over. And like, she was shorter than, and like, I think there was just a lot going on. Also, he was on a stupid scooter while he was like talking to her. So he was really a lot taller than her. And then I was just, and wearing like a real Jersey bro shirt, like one of those like dragon tattoo shirts. You know? And I was just like, no. This is not happening. But yeah, it was like, and then I went over to, I was like, who's in the front? Oh, another black woman. Like he literally ignored the only two black women working that day to fucking do the wrong thing. And like, why are you fucking around at the testing site? There were so many examples of people being really stupid where I was like, this virus is actually here. You see how we're all in PPE. It like, and you're still gonna fuck around? Like, what? I mean, I know it's a privilege, but that's again what I'm like, okay, I will insert my body, you know,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
And I was like, this is what I need to do right now. And it ended it, but I was still mad. I still get mad. I'm so mad now. I'm like, all these people walking around just like acting like assholes all the fucking time.
All the fucking time. Like there isn't a goddamn pandemic out there. Like, there were this, the last week I had to go out, go to work and put away my classroom. even though I wasn't in it, whatever. We have to pack it away for summer so the custodians can, like, do the deep clean of the school or whatever. And we had all week from Monday to Friday, and it took me till Wednesday to be able to get out of the apartment because my mom had to take one of her dogs to the vet. And this was, like, when protests first started happening and there was curfew. Mm. She lives in L.A. Mm. And her dog has seizures whenever he gets really nervous. Mm. And he hurt his paw, and she had to take him to the emergency vet. And so when the vet techs came to help him out of the car, he had a seizure. So they had to come and put him on a stretcher and whatever. And in the chaos, like, one of the vet techs dropped her keys and badge in the back seat of my mom's car. And so when my mom got home, she didn't realize it until she got home. And at that point, it was, like, after 8 o'clock or whatever the curfew time was. She's like, well, I have to go return this woman's keys. So she called her and let her know that she would be going to return her keys. And she said on her way back home, she was being tailed by a police cruiser. And she was just like, just gonna keep driving. And, like, she made it home, but she so easily could not have, because, like, she was out after curfew. Mm-hmm. She probably wouldn't have listened to her explanation. She didn't have the dog with her because she had was going back to return the keys. So even though it was an emergency and, like, whatever. And I just, like, that just, like, really stayed with me. And I'm just like, they don't need a fucking reason. So, like, 3 days it took me to be able to get out of the apartment because I'm like, all that's out there is racism and coronavirus. I don't want to go anywhere.
The twin pandemic.
That's terrifying. I don't know how you deal with it. I guess you don't have a choice, and that's how, but, like, that's awful.
Yeah. No, they don't need a reason. And, like, I had been watching posts on Twitter about who they were fucking with after curfew. You know, those poor kids, those poor college kids in Atlanta that they broke the windows and pulled out and, like, tased and pulled out of their car, who were on a date, who of course didn't know it was curfew because they said it, like, an hour before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, in LA, I saw they, like, sent the wrong hour in Spanish and then sent the right hour in English.
Oh, that's so fucked up. Oh, my God.
You can't tell me that that's not intentional.
And you think, and, like, these governments of these cities are liberal and that this wouldn't, like, they wouldn't purposely try to do shit like this.
Status quo. Not ruffling feathers, not rocking the boat.
Yep. Well, that's a dark place to end our conversation.
Well, it's a dark place in the world.
I know. Racism and coronavirus.
But I really, I love getting to see both of you and talk about this.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Amanda, do you want to give our little book appetite, stay safe out there?
All right.
And Moxie Girls Fight Back.
Moxie That's Girls right. Fight Back. That's right. Fight back as much as you can and look at the teeth.